Isla did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across Southeast as you listen. This is their story. NHS workforce planning in one of the most deprived constituencies in the country has failed to connect people who want to become nurses with training places that sit empty. The training capacity exists, the demand exists, but budget constraints imposed by Treasury mean qualified applicants are turned away while hospital wards remain dangerously understaffed.
I grew up in Rye watching my mum come home from her shifts at the care home. She'd tell me about the residents she looked after, how she made sure Mrs. Patterson had her tea, just the way she liked it, how she helped Mr. Davies write letters to his grandson. There was something about the way she spoke about that work that drew me in. It wasn't just a job to her. It was about seeing people as whole human beings, even when they were at their most vulnerable. My dad was a fisherman, up before dawn most days when the weather allowed. Between his unpredictable income and mum's care home wages, money was always tight, but they supported my decision to pursue nursing. After finishing my A-levels at Rye College in 2016, I knew I wanted that direct patient care, but I also knew we couldn't afford university straight away. So I took a job as a healthcare assistant at Conquest Hospital in Hastings, thinking I'd work for a year or two, save some money, and gain experience that would strengthen my nursing application. 3 years later, in 2019, I finally felt ready. I'd seen enough on the wards to know this was definitely what I wanted to do. I applied to the University of Brighton for adult nursing, scored well on my entrance exams, aced the interview. Everything seemed to be falling into place. Then I got the call. "I'm afraid we have to put you on the waiting list," the admissions coordinator told me. "You meet all our requirements, but Health Education England has reduced our funding for nursing places by 15% this year due to Treasury spending constraints. We simply don't have enough funded places for all the qualified applicants." I was disappointed, but I understood. Money was tight everywhere. The NHS was under pressure. It made sense that training budgets would be squeezed. I decided to reapply the following year, thinking surely the situation would improve. But when I called in early 2020, the response was even more discouraging. "The pandemic has created unprecedented financial pressures," the same coordinator explained. "Training places have been reduced further. I'm sorry, but we're not even maintaining a waiting list this year." I couldn't understand it. We were in the middle of a pandemic that was exposing critical staff shortages across the NHS, yet they were cutting training places for nurses. I decided to try a different route. East Sussex College ran a nursing associate programme that could serve as a stepping stone to full nursing qualification. I called them in the summer of 2020. "Our contract with Health Education England has been cut from 40 places to 25, the programme coordinator told me. "We're oversubscribed already. I can put you on a waiting list, but honestly, I wouldn't hold your breath." That was when I started to feel frustrated. Here I was, working on the wards every day, watching my colleagues struggle with impossible workloads, seeing agency nurses brought in at enormous expense to fill gaps, and yet every training pathway was supposedly unaffordable. In early 2021, I decided to go straight to the source. I contacted NHS England's workforce planning team, explaining that I was a healthcare assistant at Conquest Hospital, that I could see the staffing crisis firsthand, and that I wanted to understand why training places weren't being expanded to meet the obvious demand. The response came from a workforce planning manager. "We're well aware of the staffing challenges, and we appreciate your dedication. However, we simply don't have the budget to fund additional training places, despite the obvious need. These decisions are made at Treasury level, and we have to work within the allocations we're given." There it was again. "We simply don't have the budget." I'd heard it from the university, from the college, now from NHS England itself. Everyone seemed to agree that the need existed, that qualified people wanted to train, but somehow there wasn't enough money to make it happen. I accepted that explanation for months. It sounded reasonable. Everyone was saying the same thing. Money was tight, Budgets were constrained, tough choices had to be made. Then, in early 2022, everything changed. I was visiting the University of Brighton's health campus for my friend Sarah's graduation ceremony. She'd managed to get onto a midwifery program just before the cuts hit. After the ceremony, we walked around the campus, and she wanted to show me the facilities she'd trained in. We passed the simulation labs where nursing students practiced clinical skills. They were empty. Not just empty because it was a Saturday afternoon, but clearly unused. Dust on some of the equipment, chairs stacked in corners. Then I saw the notices on the bulletin boards. 20 unfilled nursing places available for September 2022 intake. Contact admissions for details. I stopped and read it again. 20 unfilled places. The same university that had told me there was no funding for my place was advertising empty spots. I asked Sarah about it. "Oh yes," she said. "They've had unfilled places for months. Apparently, Health Education England's allocation doesn't match demand. They're funded for fewer places than they could actually fill, so the capacity just sits there unused." Standing in that corridor, looking at empty training facilities and unfilled place advertisements, something clicked for me. The people existed. I was one of them. The training capacity existed. I was standing in it. The need existed. I saw it every shift at Conquest Hospital. So what exactly was it that there was no money for? The government that issues the pound sterling was telling me it couldn't find enough pounds to connect people who wanted to work with the training that would let them do that work. But the pounds aren't a finite resource that gets depleted. The government creates them when it spends. The constraint wasn't the money. The constraint was the political decision about where to create it and where not to. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. But the real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the facilities were available. They were. All of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It's the same logic as a household that says, "We cannot afford it." Except a household doesn't issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and people who needed it. I'm still at Conquest Hospital. Still a healthcare assistant. Still watching qualified people get turned away from training programs while wards operate with dangerous staffing levels. But I understand now that this isn't just my story, or even just the story of healthcare in Hastings and Rye. It's the story of every constituency where people and needs exist side by side, while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare.
What Isla experienced has a name. Fake experts. Throughout history, industries under scrutiny have deployed supposed experts to defend the indefensible. Tobacco companies funded scientists who insisted smoking was harmless. Oil companies bankrolled researchers who denied climate change. The technique is simple. Find credentialed voices willing to repeat your preferred narrative, then cite their authority as though repetition makes something true. In Isla's case, every institution cited unnamed economists, or spending constraints, or treasury allocations, as though these represented natural laws rather than political choices. Health Education England claimed budget constraints from Treasury prevented nursing training expansion. NHS England's workforce planners explained they simply don't have the budget, as though this was a physical impossibility. When challenged, they point to economists who treat government budgets like household budgets, as though repeating this false analogy makes it factual. But which economists? The profession is divided. Many macroeconomists argue the binding constraint is real capacity, not currency. Economists say, without naming them, is an appeal to unnamed authority. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources. people, skills, materials, time. And in Isla's constituency, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed, the people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Hastings and Rye rank 72 out of 543 English constituencies for deprivation, placing it in deprivation decile 2 according to the English Indices of Deprivation 2025 published by MHCLG. The constituency has 2,264 registered charities according to the Charity Commission Register for England and Wales. Organisations in the constituency received £39.8 million in total grants according to 360 Giving Grants Nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.